Good morning.
Good morning.
We will be lining mentioning the Shabbos for Bekudei, and you see that the Torah is devoting a tremendous amount of time to the construction of the Mishkan, what goes into it, the exact structure, and so on. And subsequently in Chumash, we find again a vast body of Torah itself is devoted to the procedures that took place in the Mishkan. So obviously to the Torah itself, to the Baruch Hashem, the Mishkan is a very important element, and it comprises a very important part of the whole Torah for that matter. What's the purpose of the Mishkan? Well, the Pasuk tells us what the purpose of the Mishkan is. Vasuli Mikdash B'Shukhanti B'Selchom. What you'll go will achieve by building a Mishkan is that you will bring the Shekhinah B'Selchom amongst you. Now, what I'd like to do is, I want to, the subject is relativity, Mishkan and relativity. Now, what I want to do is, this is a structure to show you where we're going. I'm going to draw your attention to, very briefly, to half a dozen points. You've got them on the sheet there. Half a dozen points. Some of them are perhaps good questions. Some of them are just, however, it's just drawing your attention to something. And then I want to explain briefly basic relativity theory. And I then want to come back and try and answer the questions or show the parallel between relativity and the Mishkan, and I think it's going to be very exciting and very fascinating here, which gives you an insight into the Mishkan not being purely an architectural structure of great beauty. Now, if we run through them, you've got 1 to 6 at the top there. You've got a Mishnah in Kalim, which discusses the Kalim Sheba Mishkan Ba'amas Bas Chamisha Tvachim. You've got a discussion there in the Mishnah, in Perek Yud Zayin, Mishnah Yud, in Kalim, as to the exact nature of the Amas which were used to measure the Kalim in the Mishkan. Now, we all know that an Amma is a cubit. What is a cubit? It's 6 hand breadths. Normally, a hand breadth is the fist, the width of a fist, 4 fingers basically, and 6 tefachim comprise an amma. Fine, we call it a kula, very straightforward. 10 inches are in a foot. It's a convention. Fine. That we all understand. Sorry? 12 inches in a foot. 12 inches in a foot. Sorry, yeah, I know. It's not, I know. Yeah, I know. You'll see, I've actually. Now, the reason I mentioned it, I appreciate the medication. No, I appreciate the correction. Yes. Now, you've got a very strange thing going on there in this Mishnah, and there's a discussion amongst the Tanoim as to whether or not the Amos which are used to measure the Kalim in the Beis Hamikdash, whether they are 5 Tvachim or 6, which exactly parallels the discussion of whether or not a foot should be 12 inches or 10 inches. And obviously this is extremely strange, because nothing can be sort of more confusing than that. It's merely a convention that we have 6 tefachim surely is an amma. So why do you suddenly have a discussion of exactly which kalim should be measured with ammas of 5 tefachim, feet of 10 inches? And there's a discussion there between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. We hold by Rav Yehuda that all the kalim in fact were ammas of 5 tefachim. And then the mayor concedes some of the kalim in the Heichel for 5 tefachim. And I just mention this because we'll come back to this. And the mayor also says, and I also agree that the top corners of the Mizbeach, the Mizbeach is like a castle in a chess piece, you know, the four corners, and the corners, their armor is there also 5 tefachim. Obviously, I don't have to say anything more, it's just extremely strange. Point number two, this goes even stranger and even more extreme. Here we're going not from a foot being 10 inches, but we're now going to have a foot being no inches. Because the Oren, we had this recently in Daf Yomi and so on in Megillah, that the Oren which Moshe made was the Neis Hoya Omeid, Einam in a Midah. What does that mean? The Kodesh Kedoshim, the Oren HaKodesh, which is the ultimate concentration of Shekhinah, the Kodesh Baruch Hu spoke, the Shekhinah itself spoke between the Kruvim. The Oren, the Torah itself gives you the dimensions of the Oren, which is 2.5, 1.5, 1.5, very clear dimensions. The Kodesh Kedoshim was a room of 20 Amos by 20 Amos, and the Gemara says that we have a Kabbalah that the size of the Oren to their respective walls were 10 Amos. Now, if you have a room of 20 by 20, the only thing that could be 10 Amos from a perpendicular of each of the adjoining walls would be that it's a pinpoint. Because then you need 20 Amos, so okay, a pinpoint, 10 Amos here, 10 Amos there, and similarly the other way around, so it doesn't take up any space. But it had dimensions. It did take up space, and it wasn't enough space. The most is a very good question, and it, don't worry, the Oren stood b'neis, miraculously. Mm-hmm. Well, the question is that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know, is very reluctant to interfere with nature and to interfere with Bechira. In certain times when it's very important, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does this, Siyam Suf and various other times, but to perform a nes for Bechira, no purpose whatsoever, and on top of which only one person ever saw this in the year, that's the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, what is the point in making such a nes? So that's point number two. Point number three, the Lechem Aponim, if you want Chagiga, it's also Gemara and Yuma, that the Lechem Aponim stayed fresh from week to week. Every Shabbos they put on a freshly baked Lechem Aponim, the showbread in the Shulchan in the Heichel. Gemara says Kisiluko Kisiduro, that in the same way it was put down freshly baked, so similarly when it was taken off it was fresh, it was still piping hot. Gemara says a Chagiga, when the Olei Regalim used to come out, they used to take out the showbread, Lechem Aponim, into the Azora, from the Heichel into the Azora, and it showed Klal Yisrael, this is the bread from last week, it's still piping hot, it's still fresh, and the Lashon uses, Re'u Chibaschem Lifnei Amokam, see how treasured you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the bread remains fresh from week, during the course of an entire week, and there was plenty of time for it to go stale. Normally it would have been stale, but now it's still fresh. Okay. No great question there, but just drawing attention to it. But what is a question is number four, that the mon, it says in the pasuk that you should kach tzenes achas, and possibly by the shalach, it says that you should take one canister of mon, shoma meloha oma mon, and you should take, but Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded by Kaddish Baruch Hu that in future Doris there will be a problem with Shmir Shabbos in the times of Yirmiyahu, about 800-850 years later. There will be a problem and people will be Mechal Shabbos, unfortunately, en masse, and Yirmiyahu will give them Musa and try to prevail upon them to keep Shabbos, and they'll say, well, yeah, but what about Panasa? We need to work on Shabbos. So he'll tell them, well, no, for 40 years, Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar, and nobody ever worked on Shabbos, and there was a mon and sustained them quite adequately during that period of time. And because it'll sort of sound theoretical, and hundreds of years previously, it won't relate to them, so Kodesh Baruch Hu told him to put aside a canister of mon, and to take this out and show them a proper audio-visual. Here you are, this is the mon. Look at it. You can see that sustained Klal Yisrael for 40 years. You do not have to work on Shabbos. But where did they keep the mon? So it was 850 years. Where was it kept? It was kept in the Oren. Now this is just a very, very strange. The Oren HaKodesh, in the Kodesh Kedoshim, that's where they kept the mon for all these hundreds of years. Now it's a very, very strange thing to do. We learned in Shabbos that you try to avoid keeping food together with Sefer Torah. In the Oren, of course, Sefer Torah, because of Moshe. So very, very strange place to keep the mon. Let's go on to the other two points that I just want to draw your attention to, and that is that Ein Lina Barosh Hashem is Be'ach. We all know that you say in Ezer Mekomen in the morning that each korban has a particular time which it has to be eaten or burnt or whatever the relevant avoda is. There's a particular time, a fixed time that one has, and past that time it becomes posel, it becomes nosa, and it will have lost its mitzvah. Nevertheless, if anything is kept on top of the Mizbeach, then it could stay there for as long as you like, and there's no problem. There's more that says in Zerachim Pei Zion, Ein Lina B'Rosh Hashem Mizbeach, that there's no passage of time, there's a sort of suspended animation on top of the Mizbeach. It's not a kasha, but it's, again somewhat a little bit strange. And the last thing, which is I think we've all, even as children, have had a question, we've come across, it's Gemara in Pesachim, Rashi brings this in Chumash, Ein Muktum Uma'ucha B'Torah, there's not a chronological order to the Torah. And I think that we've all thought to ourselves, I'm sure when we are introduced in, as little Cheder children to the concept, and you think, well, you know, if I would write a letter to my friends about my holidays, I would keep it in chronological order. 6-year-old thinks to themselves, so why the great infinite Rabbanu Shel Olam, why can't he write in a chronological order? I mean, why not? It's confusing when you've got things out of time. So these, I will come back to these points, but these are the points I wanted to draw your attention to. Some are strange and some just tell us that it will help us to be aware. Now I want to now go on, having introduced these points, I now want to go on to some basic theory of relativity, and I apologize to two people. Number one is that those people who are physicists and so on, I certainly apologize for a layman's introduction to something which they know inside out, and I think Alex here is amongst them. Those who are, of course, Malcolm, or excellence, yes. And in fact, you should be here doing the job, not me. At the same time, those of us who are maths phobic, don't worry, we'll go through one or two equations here, but you don't, if your mind freezes the moment you hear the word equation, it doesn't matter because it's only the result, it's the bottom line that counts, and if you don't follow any of the equations, it really doesn't matter, it's just the result that we need. Now, going to basic relativity, Einstein's theory of relativity, one of the elements, an important element in that, is that time is not absolute. We obviously, in our own lives, intuitively, know that, now we think that we know, that time is an absolute. That is, that there's a steady progress of second after second after second of time, and it doesn't matter what you're doing, what pressures you're under, what speed you're traveling at, none of that will make any difference whatsoever. If I arrange to meet you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock exactly when quite accurate watches, I don't really need to know you were on you were taking a flight, whatever you were doing, you and I will meet at exactly 10 o'clock with accurate watches, and 10 o'clock for you is 10 o'clock for me. Now, one of the elements of relativity is tells you that's actually, in practical terms, it's true. It works, but it's not true. And that is that the flow of time, if you can imagine a flow of time like a bath being filled up and there's a bathtub flowing, the flow of time and the passage of time will in fact depend on your speed. And this is where relativity comes in, because if you have the speed is relative, and if I jump straight away to the example, the usually quoted example, basic example which is quoted, which illustrates the point very, very well of what we're talking about, it's very counterintuitive, this, and therefore it's somewhat strange to anybody who hasn't really encountered this before, and that is you take a couple of twins, you do a very cool experiment, children are born, at the moment of birth you separate them, and you stick one on a rocket ship, and you send them off to outer space, and one you keep on Earth. Now, will the passage of time for the two twins be the same? I mean, you'd expect, let's say, 100 years later, you'd expect they should, you know, with our Rikas Yomin, despite our cool behavior towards them in their early youth, presumably they've overcome the trauma, and they meet again in 100 years' time. Now, you'd expect, if they've both had a Rikas Yomin, they are both exactly 100 years old. And the answer is, it could well be true, but it will depend on the speed of the rocket ship as to how true it is. And if, in fact, the rocket ship twin has been traveling fast enough, something which is a significant proportion of the speed of light, which is 670 million miles an hour, which is really quite a speed, then if it's something significant in those terms, then in fact the rocket ship twin will be younger than his twin on Earth. The rate of flow of time in all respects, the biological flow for him, the mechanical flow and the clocks and the rocket ship and so on, they will have all slowed down depending on the measure of the speed. Now, I've given you the formula there, and I'll run through very, very, very quickly one simple example. And the formula is like this. The equation to work out what is the time, TA, which is the time on the rocket ship, that is what the actual time for our rocket ship twin, you'll be able to work it out. And that is, you will look at TR, that is the relative time, that is the time registered on Earth, that's relative to him, the Earth time, and you multiply that by 1 minus V squared, which is the speed of the rocket ship, over C squared, which is the speed of light. And let's run through a very simple now normally you can see that the speed of light is so vast that V over C is totally insignificant. When you square it, it's even less significant, in which case you've 1 minus practically nothing is 1. The square root of 1 is 1, and TA equals TR. And that's why normally everything that we understand will work, that we assume all time is the same despite whatever speed you're traveling at. But let's take something which is traveling at a vast speed, half the speed of light, about 335 million miles an hour. And if you work through the formula, then V over C is a half. You square it as a quarter. 1 minus a quarter is 3 quarters. The square root of 3 quarters is root 3 over 2. And that's approximately 1.732 divided by 2 is 0.866. And that means that absolutely the term for the rocket ship time will equal the Earth time times 0.866, which means that only 86% of the time that is passed on Earth will be the rocket ship time. So it means that the twin that comes back, he will be 86 and a half years old, roughly 86 and a half years old, and an Earth twin he'll see as being a much older man of the age of 100. Right. Now, if you go further and you increase V, the more you increase the speed, the time will reduce as well.
Different
bemitzes depending if they meet again. That's right. They'll need. It would. Yeah, same sedger. Oh, good boy. Yeah, same sedger, but different ages. Yeah. He can't be a bemitzer. Boy, he's far too young. Yeah, exactly. If you, by the way, it's fascinating. It's not for now, but it's absolutely fascinating that in. Root 3 over 2. The square root of 3 over 4.
No, you said V over C is 1 over 2. Right?
Yes, square that is a quarter. It's a quarter. 1 minus a quarter is 3 quarters. Yeah. The square root of 3 quarters is 0.866.
Okay.
What's fascinating, it's not for now, but just I can't resist the throwaway line, and that is that in this formula, which is for time, there's a similar formula which we'll deal with in volume in a moment, but there's one constant in this formula, and that's C, which is speed of light. Why that should be in the formula, I don't know if anybody knows. Nachum could perhaps advise me, but I don't think anybody does know. This is just sort of the fact that it's true, and of course it's the basic constant of the universe, and which can't be altered, and of course we know in Chumash and Briah, that becomes a little bit clearer perhaps, Vayom Elokim Yihi Or. That's the first concrete thing that we know was actually created. It's quite fascinating, but not for now. Let's go back to our formula. If you increase the speed, as the speed gets bigger and bigger, then of course the time is going to slow down more and more. Now eventually, let's keep going, let's go faster and faster. When V actually equals C, then when you're traveling at the speed of light, which is a physical impossibility, but mathematically you can, subatomic particles can do this, but not normal matter, then what happens is you can see if V equals C, V squared over C squared is 1, 1 minus 1 is 0, The Earth time times is a multiple. The rocket ship time is the Earth time times zero, which means in simple terms it means time stops. And in fact, it becomes very interesting. In fact, if you let with mathematical license, if you let the speed be greater than the speed of light, you wind up with a function of the square root of minus one, which of course doesn't exist. But if you in mathematics and physics, if you label it as I and you use it, of course it's a very useful tool. It's some sort of cyberspace somehow that seems to exist, and of course it means that time is a function of I. It's imaginary, I stands for imaginary, and you can jump back and forth, and I've read articles on subatomic particles that seem to in fact do this. They come back younger than they left us. But in any event, for the purposes of this, you have a very simple point, and that is that normally time frames are exactly, time is always the same. When you're going at extremes of nature, really extremes of nature, you think of vast speeds here, It does actually have an effect on time, and the fact you're going fast enough, by the sort of very boundaries of what one can do within nature, you can reach a stage where time is slowing down radically, and to a stage where time ceases altogether. And in fact, if you go further, you can jump back and forth in time. And in fact, in Yigdal, which is based on Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam, you say Bar Kodesh Baruch Hu Kaviyochol Nimtz He's Ein Lo Demusaguf, and therefore Nimtzor Ve'Ein Eso Metzir So, and therefore he can exist, but there's no time to his existence. Because this, what's the constraint of traveling greater than the speed of light? It's a thing physical. But if you're not physical, then time actually doesn't really exist at all. It's imaginary. You have an identical formula for this is time. There's an exact correlation of volume, space taken, the amount of space you take up, and exactly the same thing. Things will shrink as you're going faster and faster. In fact, it wouldn't be possible, but if the Earth twin could see his rocket ship twin at the age of, and again with the same formula, when the rocket ship twin is traveling at half the speed of light, he would see his twin. Seems, oh, he's a very thin fellow. He's much thinner. He would occupy much less space. And again, the formula works through. If you go at the speed of light, it doesn't occupy any space whatsoever. Now, with this in mind, and obviously in this space of half an hour, I can't really do this justice, but I want to share with you some fascinating insights, which let's go back to the first of the four questions, if we may. Now, we said that the Kalim and the Mishkan were Amos of Fatsuachim and not six, i.e., what does that mean? If every foot you have 10 inches, it means it's going to be smaller. So it's actually very understandable that in the Heichal, which is part of the more Kodeshic part of the overall Mikdash, the Kalim become smaller. If the Kalim become smaller, therefore the Amos Abbas Chamisha. Why? But you can't normally, that can't happen. But when there is a correlation, in the same way, when there is, so to speak, in inverted commas, super kedusha, super presence of Shechina, then this is not the normal world that we live in. This is an extreme of our world. And what seems to happen is there's natural manifestations, it impacts on the world, and in which case things start to shrink. Follow it through logically. Question two was asked about the Oren. The Oren is Einam in a Midah. It doesn't occupy any space. And we said, well, what's the point of making this nace? Well, the answer is that the Oren is the ultimate presence of Shechina in our world. In fact, there's a Midrash Ne'elam which says that those Kruvim are the entrance to the Kruvim of Gan Eden. But it's the ultimate Kedusha, V'nadati L'cha, Mishama, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Shechina spoke between the Kruvim. So, when you're at that level of Kedusha, that intensity of Shechina, it impacts on the physical world, and therefore the Oren didn't take up any space. Just like when you were traveling at the speed of light, beyond the realms of nature, then there's no space. It wasn't a miracle for a purpose, it's a natural event. It's a natural situation when the Shechina is in its total intensity, that the maximum that can be sort of born and experienced in our world. The parallel then, if we just go on the other couple of points we made there, that with the Lechem Aponim and the Mon, of course they fit in beautifully. Because what do we say about the Lechem Aponim? It takes fresh for a whole week. What does that mean? Well, how do you keep it fresh for a whole week? Well, if time is significantly slowing down, so it wasn't a week, it's relative to the world, it was a week that came week to week. But relative to itself, maybe it's minutes, whatever it might be, and therefore it kept fresh. And that's why the Lechem Aponim, which is kept again in the Heichal, in the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan, the parallel, then again, the time slowed down, it remained fresh. Again, it was a natural result. We asked about the Mon. A very strange place to put the Mon in the Oren. But, of course, it makes sense. Because in the Oren, if the Oren is Einam Mida Mida, it doesn't occupy any space, then the correlation of that, there can't be any time. Now, how do you keep a food fresh for 850 years? There's only one place in the universe where time doesn't move, and that is in the Oren. They had to put it in the Oren. Right. Let me just briefly then go on to answer the next two points that we dealt with. We said, Ein Lina Barosh Hashem Mizbeach, that there's no time passing on the top of the Mizbeach. Now, we won't have time to go into it, but there's another part of Einstein's information, and that is, of course, the most famous equation, all of us know, E equals MC squared. But what that really means is that basically matter is frozen energy. The the force of an atom bomb is that you can unlock every bit of matter has phenomenal amount of energy, but because the protons cancel out the electrons and so on, the forces all cancel each other. When you can release that, you break the cancellation. You've got a huge tug of war with 1,000 powerful men in this direction, 1,000 powerful men in that direction, all pulling on a rope. It's not moving. You slip the rope, and of course the forces are released. Now, matter basically is frozen energy. There's a fascinating Zohar which tells us that the world was created, that first, of course, before a physical world was created, it was purely spiritual world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. But what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He took from the spiritual worlds, he created a physical world, and the process was first energy, which of course is physical, but is not as blatantly or tangibly physical as the normal physical world. For example, if you lift up a book, there's more potential energy in this book. We can't see it, you can't touch it or anything like that, you can't sense it, but nevertheless it's there, and with the energy it created matter. Now, in physical terms, I've got references here for it to back it up, all energy is a type of fire. In which case, it would make sense that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would first create energy, type of fire, and with that fire, create a physical world. The Zohar says that the first four letters of Bereishis is, you know, you can read Chumash not only in the way we have it, Bereishis, stop, Elohim, stop, and so on, Bereishis, Bara, stop, and so on. You can, the letters, in fact, can be read in various ways, and you can break where you want. Well, not where you want, but there are various other alternative ways. The Zohar says that the Torah can also be read as Bora Eish, the Kodesh Baruch Hu created fire, and with that, Yos is a Shemayim Vesa Oretz. So, and fire we always find as the interface, the place of interface between a Kodesh Baruch Hu and the world. You find this Moshe Rabbeinu meets a Kodesh Baruch Hu as Nehavoah. The Torah itself was given a black fire and a white fire, and on the Mizbeach that we're going to deal with now, in a couple of minutes we've got left, on top of the Mizbeach, and that's what we're going to focus now, you've got a Eish Yoredes Min HaShemayim. There's a constant interface with the Shekhinah. There's two places with interfacing with the Shekhinah. Between the Kruvim, the Kodesh Kedoshim, which we discussed, and there's another place, and there's in the outer courtyard, there's an Eish Yoredes Min HaShemayim. Most of the Yuma, Kapal Kami Beis, Afal Pish, Eish Yoredes Min HaShemayim, Mitzvah L'Hobi Min HaHeti. There's still bits of Pastabin, a wood, but there's a constant fire which is interfaced with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, if with this in mind, if we go back to our Ein Lina B'Rosh Hashem Mizbeach, it makes sense that there would be no, we said there was suspended animation on top of the Mizbeach. Now again, in the same way that there was no time in the Orem, because there's a great concentration of Shkinah, Kaviyochol, equally well on top of the Mizbeach, where there's a direct interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with this fire, which is the interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shkinah is there in great intensity. So of course there's no time. And therefore you can leave your kubbonis on top of there and they won't become fossil. What's interesting, I mentioned about the corners. What about the corners, which are not in direct line of fire, literally, of the fire, but just nearby? Well, just like the kelim in the heichal, they shrunk because they're close to the Shekhinah, not directly impacted by the Shekhinah, but very close, so the corners themselves shrink. Right. Just the last point is, and it's also interesting, of course, you say, well, what's the connection between the top of the Mizbeach and the Kodesh Kedoshim? And the answer is that they are both the Orem and the fire on the Mizbeach, Nura, are the same letters, not the Mikra. Okay. Just the last point, Ein Mukti Mukhim Torah. We asked, it's very strange that the Torah isn't written in chronological order. And the answer is like this. Now, with this you understand. The Torah itself is the Eish Chara or Eish Levona. And the Torah is the sort of the encapsulation of the Shekhinah in our world. If that's the case, of course it's not subject to time. Just like he himself is an Imsar of Einis Amitsiyasa.